Hello and welcome to the Emmy Awards. I'm your host, Emmy Cardinale, and this is my podcast where I talk about what I've been watching or rewatching once a week. If this is the first episode of mine that you stumble upon and you like it, please feel free to follow me wherever you listen to podcasts so you can get notified when I upload a new episode. I typically upload on Sundays, sometimes Mondays. I'm trying to get back to my Sunday uploads, but normally it's out Monday at the latest. On occasion, I do a Tuesday upload, but that's really in rare cases. And if you need updates, like, I post delays and stuff on my Twitter, or you can just follow me, and if you have your notifications on, you should be notified when a new episode goes live so you can find out that way. This episode is going to be primarily a Vanderpump Rules recap of the latest episode. Before I jump into Vanderpump Rules, there are some shows that I want to talk about, but I don't have any, like, structured notes about them. Just, like, some thoughts on my mind. So I'll put those in the description if the segments are... Like, I don't know how long I'm going to talk about them because I'm a rambler. I'm a yapper, as the children say. So in my mind, I'm like, I could talk about the show for like 2 seconds, or I could like ramble for like 5 minutes. If it's a notable length, I will section it off. If not, it'll be like a brief mention in another section. But anyways, thanks so much for tuning in. Sorry for the really weird, random, long-winded introduction that totally makes my podcast sound not appealing at all. But thanks for tuning in if you liked it. I haven't like just talked about one show in a podcast episode in a while, and it feels weird. Like, I feel like I should be doing more, which is so stupid because, like, it's not stupid, but like, I'm hard on myself truly for no reason, because just talking about the Vanderpump episode with all of my commentary, like, it will probably be like an hour long. So I don't know why I feel the need to like add more to that. An hour is plenty of time of me talking for a podcast, but I'm self-conscious and I'm like, no, I need to fill this space with something else. And I'm like, I don't really know. I haven't been watching a ton of things. I mean, I have been, but nothing I really have like formed thoughts on. So before I jump into Vanderpump Rules, a few shows that I've been watching. I'm still watching 9-1-1. I finished season 4. I'm like halfway through, I finished season 3. I'm halfway through season 4. I've kind of slowed down in my 9-1-1 to watch, not because I don't love it, just because I'm so invested now that I had it on, like, when I was watching the first 2 seasons, I had it on, like, in the background while I was doing other stuff, and I just get so invested in the episodes now that I can't focus on other stuff while I'm watching it. So I just, like, it's taking me longer to get through because I can't really have it on in the background. So, because of that reason, I haven't finished season 4. But season 4 is their COVID season. Like, they're now at the point where they're like, you know, I have to say, though, some shows, it's like, why mention it if you're going to do it poorly? 9-1-1, I get it. They're paramedics, you know? It makes sense. And we do see, I don't remember what episode in season 4 this is, but there is an episode where they're responding to some woman's emergency, and I don't even remember what her emergency was, but she talks about, like, losing her husband to COVID. I thought that was a great storyline. I feel like in the shows I've seen talk about the pandemic, but I don't know, I don't watch medical shows. This is like the closest to like a medical show that I've watched. So I don't know if like Grey's Anatomy talked about COVID, but I feel like I don't see a ton of this stuff in media, you know, like, and I appreciate them putting the severity on. And you know what I really like? They wear masks like all the time, which sounds stupid. Like, that sounds like such a minor detail, but like, I remember when SVU came back, they would literally like wear a mask for like 1 second and then take it off in the scene. Like, just don't make COVID a storyline if you're gonna, like, that's annoying to me. In 9-1-1, they have like full scenes and full conversations where they're masked the entire time, and I'm like, thank you, this is like realistic. Like, people, if you're masking, you don't take a mask off after like 1 second to have a conversation with the person, because COVID didn't fucking disappear because you're having a conversation now, you fucking morons. So I appreciate that there are like full scenes of them like masked. I think that's great and accurate. I really appreciate that, because that always, oh my god, Law and Order SVU when they came back and they were like, you know, COVID, BLM, that was one of my least favorite seasons of Law & Order SVU, because I think they talked about, like, they handled both of those topics horribly. But what would you expect? I loved, oh my God, the season 4 episode. I talked about this last week, that sometimes, or that something I liked about the show so far is that they do kind of, like, they have episodes fully focused on, like, a character's backstory. I really liked that, and the episode about Buck and his history and us seeing his relationship with Maddie when they were growing up and his relationship with his parents, like, literally I'm tearing up thinking about it because it hit me like a gut punch. It was so emotional. I love Buck. He's like I love him. He's like one of my favorite characters I've ever seen, and I love Maddie and I love their relationship, and I think that's so beautiful. I don't know. I love a sibling relationship. It's sad but also beautiful. Like when you kind of see that, like, the montage, or I don't know, sequence, I don't know, I guess it's a montage of all of the postcards that Buck was sending Maddie while he was figuring out his move, like, his next move after she gives him the Jeep, and then he kind of, like, goes all around figuring out what he's gonna do with his life, and seeing those postcards, and, like, I don't know, that really... It really touched me, because I'm sure Maddie not reaching out to Buck, there were probably many layers to it. Maybe she wanted him to work it out himself, and I mean, he got to the right place, but I'm sure it was also like she was dealing with an abusive relationship. Like, it's just beautiful that after everything they've been through and the time they spent apart and like rifts in their relationship and any of that, like, it's just so beautiful and special to see where their relationship is now, and that after everything, and maybe Buck having some kind of, I wouldn't say it was resentment, because I feel like he might have, like, I feel like on some level he did feel abandoned by Maddie, but I think he also, the entire time, he knew that Doug was abusive. Like, he was like, when are, like, it, I feel like Buck was always, like, I don't think that Buck would ever, like, turn Maddie away, you know? But it is really beautiful to see that even after, like, that they had, because when we're introduced to Maddie, there's obviously this implication that they don't talk very often, but seeing this backstory and then seeing how, and thinking back, and I'm excited to rewatch the show when I've caught up, thinking back to like the beginning of when she showed up in LA and the way he like welcomed her in, like, I don't know, it's really beautiful. I love their relationship. The characters in the show are just so well done. I'm really excited to see where it continues to go. I love, like, most of the characters. I'm so excited for Chimney and Maddie right now. Maddie's pregnant. I'm excited for that. I'm genuinely rooting for all the characters. I really like that May, Athena's daughter, is now working in the 911, like, as a 911 dispatcher. I think that's a really cool way to, like, integrate, like, a younger generation. And there's, like, a new character who's, like, a probation firefighter who's younger. Like, I think it's nice to, like, it introduce more people to the cast, or like expand people's roles. Like, I like to see May as a character beyond just being Athena's daughter. Like, now we see her have her own storyline, and obviously she still has that connection to, that's why she was introduced in the show, but I like seeing her as her own person, not just like Athena's daughter. And I think that's really, really cool, and a really interesting way to integrate her into the story, like, in a very natural way. I think that was a really good choice. And I also like that it wasn't like she became a cop because her mom was a cop, but she's still in this world. Like, she, like, I don't know, I like that, because she's kind of like professionally connected to her mother in this way, or like into the storyline in this way, but it's also not like she just is, like, doing exactly what her mom did. I don't know if that made any sense. But I love the show. I'm so excited to catch up and get to season 7. I don't know if I'm going to catch up by the time it returns. I don't think so. But anyways, I wanted to talk about the tortured poets department a little bit. But then I started talking about TV, and now I'm, like, not in the mood to talk about the tortured poets department. But that's part of the reason that I, like, didn't really prepare much more beyond the Vanderpump recap, because tortured poets department, you know, was really taking up all of my... And I do have a lot to say about the tortured poets department, but I'm not, like, I'm not a music podcast, and I also just don't feel like... I don't know. This probably won't be its own chapter, because I'm, like, I don't know what I have to say. But anyways, another show that I, like, started watching, I'm really, really fresh into it. I haven't gone very far. Is Heartbreak High. I kept getting clips of it, and I was kind of in the mood to watch something like high school-y, so I gave it a watch. I like it. I do think I will keep watching it. I'm not that invested yet. I'm only like 3 episodes into season 1. I don't know if the characters are just not my vibe. I don't know if the high school thing just doesn't connect with me the same way. Like, I feel like high school content, it has to connect with me in a very specific way. You know, and this, like, doesn't feel nostalgic to me. Maybe because they're British. Like, maybe it doesn't feel, like, nostalgic. So I'm kind of just, like, not as engaged, because I'm like, this is about high schoolers. But there's no, like, nostalgia factor for me. So I'm not, like, super invested yet. I like the characters. I think the writing's really funny. I really like this, the plot device of... Season 1, obviously, now season 2 is airing, already aired, so, like, I'm sure things change a lot, but I really like that in the beginning of this show, like, what, that all the main characters are kind of brought together in this class they're forced to take because of, like, some graffiti that the two main characters who we meet at the beginning of the show, like, made this big map in, like, some kind of stairwell where they would, like, write people's names and connect them based off of, like, what they, like, how, like, the levels they went to hook up, like, they would have code, like, it was crazy. And I don't know if it's revealed how they found the map, because, again, I'm on episode, like, 3. And by on episode 3, I mean, like, I just, like, I've watched episodes 1 and 2. So, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. But I like that there kind of is, it feels like, I don't know, like, suddenly there's a reason that all these people who maybe don't talk to each other that much are, like, forced to be in this environment, because all of the kids who were on the map are, like, forced to take this class together to learn how to, like, which I honestly, I think that's a great thing. Like, I think that's great. I think teenagers in general need to learn more about, like, safe sex and stuff like that. I think that's great to teach, but I find it interesting. The characters are interesting. It just hasn't hooked me in. But again, I've had a lot going on with, like, the tortured poets. I'm still watching 9-1-1. Like, I have a lot going on in my brain. But I do like it so far. I will probably keep watching it. Besides that, I do want to say I will be covering this season of Circle. I don't know what number the season... Like, I don't know what season number we're on. I haven't watched a season of The Circle, like, properly in a while. The last one I watched was when they had the Spice Girls on. I don't know if that was, like, 2 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago. I don't know how many seasons of The Circle they make a year. But my sister listens to this podcast, and she sent me a message saying, Emmy, are you going to cover The Circle? And I love to please my fans. And by my fans, I mean the one person who I know listens to this podcast regularly, and that's my sister. And you know what? I do have the space to fill, because Vanderpump's almost over. And besides that, I don't really have, like, a recurring show to talk about going forward, because the Bachelorette doesn't premiere until, like, July, probably. And in that in-between, like, I really don't have anything to cover right now as soon as Vanderpump's over. So I'm just kind of, like, bopping around. I do eventually want to do a deep dive on 9-1-1. Somehow, I want to watch the whole series. And then in my rewatch structure, some kind of deep dive, I think I'll go character by character, like, based on the seasons. Like, what is Buck's general arc in season 1, then season 2, etc. I think that makes the most sense to me, but I'm gonna catch up first and then I'll figure it out. I want to do something with 9-1-1 for sure. I just haven't figured out what yet, but I will be talking about The Circle. I'm gonna start next week. I know a few episodes are already out, but I just didn't have time to, because I decided I was going to cover The Circle on, like, Wednesday, and I'm recording this on Friday, so I just didn't have time to, like, properly watch all the episodes and take notes, because Taylor Swift's album came out yesterday, so too much going on. But that's all I wanted to talk about besides Vanderpump. So I'm going to just jump straight into Vanderpump Rules. This is season 11, episode 12, and it's called How'd You Like Them Appled? And I have to say, when I first watched this episode, I, like, didn't remember, like, I didn't grasp that Sheena's song that they talk about later is called Apples, so I didn't understand the title. Like, it didn't register with me. But anyways, so the episode opens with Sheena at Kyle Chan's store. She's shooting her Good as Gold remix music video. Then Ariana and Lala arrive to the music video shoot. We find out that Katie's sick and not coming. Sheena in confessional says she doesn't think Katie is sick. She thinks she's avoiding Lala after the fight they had. Sheena in confessionals talks about how positive music has been for her. And she's just very positive. She's like, I didn't think when I recorded this song it would, like, have this kind of life. And recording music has been such a positive thing for me. And you know what? I'm happy for her. Sheena does make some fun music. People are so puritanical. Maybe that's not the right word. But it's like if somebody makes a song or any kind of art and they had fun making it, people listen to it and they enjoy listening to it. Who cares if it's not the next, you know, amazing, like, song of a generation? Sheena Shea had fun making Good as Gold, and during Pride, it bops. I say that as if I've ever been to a Pride festival, like, let alone a Pride festival that played Good as Gold. I've never been to a Pride festival. Honestly, not even for any, like, particular reason. It's just because I never felt the desire to go when I was under 18. Not that it's, like, not for children. It just, you know, it gives very much, like, party vibes. And I didn't really party in high school. Like, it wasn't something that I was thinking about doing in high school. And then when I went to college, I lived in rural Ohio and I didn't have a car for the first 2 years. Plus, I wasn't there in the summer and my summers were complicated because my parents were living in Brazil. And then eventually I did get my license, but I got my license August of 2019, and by the time there was a Pride, you know, I think Pride was canceled in the summer of 2020. I don't even remember, but if it was happening, I wouldn't have even considered going, like, at all, but I don't think it did. I don't like to attend big gatherings. I really don't. The Eras Tour was, like, a stretch for me. I don't like to go to things like that, even if it's outdoors, if it's crowded, I get stressed out. I just haven't been, but maybe one day. I'm not ruling it out. I also, like, I work weekends. Now that I, like, live somewhere, now that I, like, live alone and I have a professional, like, life, and I could probably go to Pride somewhat comfortably, you know, I work weekends. But anyways, I didn't need to go on that weird tangent about how I've never been to Pride. I have nothing against gay people. No, I'm kidding. I was just like, I don't know. I went on this whole thing about how I've never been to Pride Festival. It sounded kind of homophobic. I'm so sorry to the gays. Anyways, I lost my place in my notes. Then we are at James and Allie's house. Allie tells James about the Raquel Bethany Frankel podcast, which is, you know, it's funny. I completely forgot about this, but I was thinking about it and I was like, I covered that. Like, there's an episode of mine from last summer that was titled, like, my thoughts on the Bethany Frankel Rachel interview, because I went on about it for a little bit. I don't even remember what I said because I don't remember the contents of the interview, and there were also, like, so many parts and so many, like, nuances. And now also, like, Rachel has had her own podcast for, like, months now, so for me, in my brain, it's hard to distinguish, like, what did she talk about that I'm thinking about from the podcast originally, or what is it now that she's been, like, reiterating, or, like, she said now. Like, I genuinely, I don't know, I can't keep the narrative straight, and as much as I do sometimes bring in, like, commentary on stuff I saw on social media, and I keep up with it. Like, I do keep up with it. I just, honestly, I'm not, like, an updates account in any capacity. I really like commenting on TV, regardless of what kind of TV it is. So I really like to mostly focus on, like, the product I'm being sold as an audience, less than, like, the social media conversations around it, though I am in the loop, so I will bring it up sometime. But when it comes to Raquel, Rachel, whatever, I feel like I haven't been digesting much of it because I'm kind of over the whole, and I'm not saying that her story shouldn't be told or that she doesn't have the right to speak. Everybody has the right to talk about their life. And I'm sure going through that kind of like public cancellation, like any kind of scandal is a good word for it. Like, I'm sure going through that kind of public scandal, even if you did do something wrong, I'm sure like that amount of hate is like way too overwhelming to the psyche. On top of her dealing with like Tom Sandoval, who seems like a nightmare of a human being to be around, like that's also just like a really unhealthy thing when you're already going through. It's not normal for somebody to mess up, even if it's in that capacity of like, you know, having an affair with like their friend's partner. It's a big transgression, but it's not normal for somebody to like fuck up in that way and have like a million people commenting on their fuck up and tearing them apart. So even if the initial thing she did was wrong, people always take things too far. That amount of negative criticism is not healthy to somebody's mind. So I think she obviously has the right to speak up. I just personally don't care for that narrative anymore. And I think maybe I would have more, like, I'd be more open to listening if this season hadn't felt like it was so much. It feels like this season of Vanderpump Rules, the overwhelming narrative from the production team, through Lala, through Sheena, through, like, I feel like the message we're getting is that Ariana hasn't moved on and she should move on. And so because of that, I'm like, I don't really care about Rachel's point of view. They're not even letting Ariana grieve properly. Why am I going to hear out Rachel? Like, you know, but I don't even know. I keep going on unnecessary tangents. But we find out that Ali tells James that Rachel was blaming Hippie's behavior on James. James is obviously not upset, not happy about this. And, like, the thing is, I might have talked about this already, but I just feel like Raquel's insistence that, like, Hippie was some uncontrollable dog, and it really feels like it's just trying to absolve her from the blame of abandoning her dog, which is something she did. And I'm not going to just be like, well, you know, she couldn't take care of the dog. Because, and again, I'm not going to keep going on and on, because I've already rambled how I feel about this whole dog situation. I've talked about it into the ground. But I just do not think that you can, like, you do not give a shit about that animal if you just leave it. You, like, I'm sorry. That is crazy to me. And then to try to find this way to just constantly be like, James was so bad, the dog turned out this way. There's no accountability. Like, there's no accountability on you didn't get the dog trained properly. If the dog genuinely had behavioral issues, he was your dog as well. You know, when you're living, when you have shared custody of an animal, if it has behavioral issues, it's not just on one person. Like, if you had a kid and the kid committed a crime, which, like, I mean, kids and animals are not the same. This is a very loose hypothetical. But, like, imagine a parent being like, well, it was his dad's fault. It's like, but if you were aware of the issues at the time, you, like, help the kid. You don't just let their dad train them to be... This is making no sense. I'm making no sense. My point is, it's like... And at the end of the day, maybe James was not the best dog parent at the time. You still abandoned your dog. Like, okay. Then we're back to the music video shoot. It's kind of like the opening of the episode is kind of intercut back and forth between these two scenes. So back at the music video shoot, they talk about the podcast as well. Rachel said on the podcast that she and Ariana are just acquaintances. She said Sheena had a savior complex and their relationship was equally beneficial. Both women take issue with this. Back at Ali and James, we see Ali tell James that Raquel took no accountability, which is exactly what I've been saying. She said that after her breakup with James, she was so upset. She wasn't over James and she never actually loved Tom. And Ali says this is weird because that's not what she was saying at the reunion for last season. Then James S. Sandoval, which, again, a big issue I have with Rachel. I keep alternating between calling her Rachel and Raquel. I'm sorry about that. But, like, that's one of my biggest issues I have with her. And that dog thing, I think, is something that really sticks out to me. Because it's, like, Sandoval's not in that equation at all. Like, if you want to argue that Tom Sandoval manipulated in this relationship and you were vulnerable and he was this and he was that, I'm not gonna obviously put all of the blame on him. You still, like, you were an active participant, but there is, like, a level that I would maybe have more sympathy because of how nasty Tom Sandoval appears to be, like, it comes across, that I'm sure being in his life would, like, really fuck you up mentally. But the dog thing, you abandoning your dog, had nothing to do with Tom Sandoval. That I have nothing to do with Tom Sandoval. I don't care who the fuck I'm, like, what the fuck is going on in my life. I'm not doing that to a pet. I'm not doing that to a pet. I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous to me. And that's where I feel like she loses me, because it's just, I don't know, it's a bad sign. Kind of concerning. Then James says that Sandoval invited him to his rehearsal space, offered to let him open for his band. James in confessional says he's trying to figure out his relationship with Sandoval now. Ali mentions that Lala is doing a sperm donor party, so kind of setting up the main events of the episode. Back at the music video shoot, Lala asks Ariana if her house is available for Lala's sperm donor party, and Ariana says her house is a mess now without Anne, which, not surprising, because Tom Sandoval seems like a disaster. But you know what? Their house might be a mess without Anne, but you know what they definitely have? Pens, toilet paper, batteries, all the essentials. Like, you know, you can't eat, but honey, we have batteries. Like, I'm sorry, it's just so funny to me, the things that Tom Sandoval, like, the examples he brings. And it's like, it really feels like that's, like, all he has, because it's the same things all the time. You just know before they broke up, there was a time, like, there was a moment, like, the reason I feel like he brings this up is he probably went and he couldn't find a fucking pen in the entire apartment, and he went and he bought pens, and he was like, Ariana doesn't do anything, and it like festered in him, and it became like a big thing, you know. It became a big moment in his mind about how much Ariana wasn't doing for them, because he didn't have a pen that one time. That's what I really imagine, with his focus on these very specific items that aren't even, like, that necessary to people's day-to-day existences. I'm not saying, like, people don't need batteries, but I feel like a lot of things, like, you know, that people use daily, like laptops or phones or, like, things like that, they're, like, charged not really with batteries. Like, I can't think, I mean, like, lamps. No, but my lamps have, like, light bulbs. Like, who, I'm trying to think of what I use in my day-to-day life, like, when I wake up. Like, what do I need, what do I genuinely use that has batteries? Not that much. Truly not that much. I've bought batteries, like, one time since I moved to LA. I bought batteries one time, and I've never had to buy more batteries. Pens, again, I already had this. Why am I dissecting Tom Sandoval's silly little things? But it's like, I buy pens somewhat frequently, but, like, not that much. He wasn't talking about, like, fucking, like, he wasn't talking about, like, eggs. What do you mean? Trash bags? I don't know. Why am I trying to understand Tom Sandoval? The man is an enigma. Then Lala in confessional says that this is a big deal. They're choosing her child who will be in her life forever. She's talking about the sperm donor party. She wants this to take the science jargon out of it a little bit. I don't know. Like, many thoughts. I don't want to just keep going on and on about how I feel about anonymous donors and the weird cryobank ad that has been in this entire season of Vanderpump Rules so far. I don't like it, but, and I just want to say, I have nothing against, like, people who have, like, who are donor conceived. This is, like, I feel like I sound kind of judgmental, and it really isn't coming from, like, a puritanical, like, babies are made between man and wife or anything like that. That's not even what this is about. I'm completely for people having the ability to, like, start a family in a way that makes the most sense for them. I just think the fact that you were bringing a child who will eventually be an adult with their own full life is something that should be taken into account. It shouldn't just be your desires to be a parent. And I'm not against sperm donation at all. I just think that it's not regulated in the United States. I think the fertility industry is a nightmare. And I think the people who take the brunt of it are the children. And that is my biggest gripe with the whole thing. It has nothing to do with like some kind of judgment on like what family should be or anything like that in any capacity. Like truly, it's not about that. I just think that a child, when they are an adult, or even as a child, because, you know, children can get sick too, but I just feel like they're, like, it's just so important to me personally as an adult. Like, having your, like, I know firsthand how valuable having a family history of something can be to getting diagnosed, to getting early treatment. Like, that really matters, and I think children should have access to that. And that is really my thing. Because I feel like sometimes when I just say, oh, I don't, like, it comes across as some weird, like, I don't know, like, the way some people I've talked about LOL and they're like, a child needs their father. For me, it's not even about that. It's literally just, and I think I talked about this before, but it's like, there are laws protecting you. And there are people who genuinely want to, like, who are happy to donate sperm and don't want any parental responsibility, but are happy to have you raise a family, but who you can have contact with. So when your child grows up and needs to know their genetic history, they can have that access so they can get the care that they might need. That's all that it's about, truly. Like, there are ways, it's really not me judging Lala as a parent. It's not me judging the idea of women who want to raise children by themselves. It's truly not about that. It's just about the fact that this baby that you're bringing into the world will one day be an adult who might want to know that their biological father's great aunt had, like, something. Just, like, anything. You know, it's so important to have access to your health history. I'm going on an unnecessary tangent. I'm sorry. I really want to make that clear, because it's really not trying to be from, like, a judgmental place of, like anything other than just wanting the best for the children being brought into the world. So, but anyways, moving on. Back at Allie and James's house, Allie says the party will be interesting because Lala has been venting about Katie a lot. They're just doing a lot of good planting of seeds for later scenes in the episode, which I think is great. At Schwartz's apartment, Sandoval arrives. He's upset about the podcast. He says in confessionals that he wasn't ready to give up hope until he heard it from her directly. Schwartz is like, it's over. It's been over. Like, yeah, dude. She, like, literally blocked him. And they talked about this, like, episodes ago. Like, I don't even remember what episode it was now, because it feels like it was, like, 3 months ago at this point. Obviously, in the timeline, it probably hasn't been 3 months. But, like, since I've seen that episode, it feels like it's been 3 months, where there was a point where he was like, she's not returning my calls. Her publicist isn't returning my calls. And somebody was like, it's over. I think Lisa said that to him. He didn't get it. Like, it's been over, dude. It's been over. Silly man. Then at Tom, Lisa's there. She's gonna meet both Toms. This is like the next day, or maybe it's not the next day. No, it is the next day. She's there to meet both Toms, because they're gonna try cocktails for the brunch, because now Tom is having a brunch. Sandoval's late, like he normally is. Then Schwartz says he's worried about Sandoval after the podcast. Lisa says, who cares? If she's safe and well, who cares what she has to say? And, like, literally, that's how I feel. Like, Tom Sandoval is kind of ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I say that and then I'm like, you sound kind of mean and invalidating. And, like, you know, who am I? I'm not even trying to comment on, like, why he hasn't moved on. It's really not about that. If he wants to be upset for like, 10 years, that's really none of my business. I am the queen of shit from, like, 10 years still pissing me off today. Like, it's not about that, because I don't like to comment on how fast people move on. It's more about, like, how don't you realize? Maybe it's because I am, like, the opposite. I think people don't like me when they still do. Dom Sandoval is like holding on to hope when this girl has shown him very clearly she's not interested. I by now would be like, she hates me. She wants me to die. Like, I can't relate to this. I can't relate to this, like, thinking that somebody's still invested when they're clearly not. I would have been like, she hates me already. I think that's the disconnect for me, where I'm like, I would be like, it's over, like, months ago. But, you know, with peace and love to Tom Sandoval. Lisa says that she thought that Tom was in a better place, and Schwartz says that he was, but the podcast really set him back, which I do think is also fair, you know. They haven't been talking about Raquel for a while, so he was, you know, focused more on his relationships with other people. He had a lot to think about with the house and the tensions with Ariana and then Anne and then firing Anne and then getting a new assistant. And then, you know, he's had a lot preoccupying his brain. He probably now thinks have kind of quieted down. The house thing is moving forward, and he is probably like, really, the reality of the Raquel thing hit him. Like, I think maybe he was living with, and you know what, I take back a little bit of what I said, because I do sometimes hold on to unrealistic hope about things that, like, at that point it's like, get the hint. You know what, I do sometimes, I, you know, I do that, not really with romantic relationships, but with other things in my life, I'm like, yeah, no, this is for sure gonna happen to me. And even, like, it's not gonna happen to me. But then Sandoval arrives late. Schwartz is, like, making cocktails. Lisa and Sandoval have a little conversation. She asks about the house. Tom says his offer was months ago, but now, after Ariana's response, his thoughts might have changed. I'm sorry. Tom Sandoval is either a liar or he's just not very bright. Because, and I think Ariana said this on the after show, she was like, Tom Sandoval really thought that it would be like, I would just, he'd write me a check and I'd like pack a backpack and we'd be good to go. When it's like, you have to refinance the house. And then she explained a ton of things. She was like, and then because of the, like, I don't know, you refinance it and then you have to take out, like, it would cost, like, I don't even know. She explained it. I don't know anything about houses, but she explained all of the steps it would take. And, like, Tom Sandoval obviously can't afford the house by himself. If Tom hadn't been so stubborn and being like, no, I put shit into this house, I want to stay here, and had just, like, taken his losses and been like, I fucked up, I'm gonna cut my losses, then, because I don't, Ariana was never saying, I want the house completely and you have to leave. Like, it was Ariana always being like, I'm not gonna leave the house because I don't want to lose my rights to the house. Tom Sandoval was the one who was never able to think about moving forward. It was like, he did something and then he didn't want to face the consequences. You know what I mean? And now, months later, when there's actually, like, stuff is moving and she's like, this is the plan, he's like, shit, I can't afford the house by myself. When if he had just taken a moment to not be so stubborn and to be like, I can't afford this house by myself, Ariana wants to move forward, I should just move forward, it's best for me, it's best for her, and had just, you know, taken a moment to act and think from, like, a logical, like, Tom Sandoval, from my perspective, and I don't know the man personally, I feel like he doesn't take a moment to step back from his emotions and actually look at the facts of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, Tom Sandoval, it seems like he's always reacting from a place of emotion. He decides something based off of an emotion, and then he stays firm in it. Like, I feel like he was like, I don't want to leave the house because, you know, moving, losing a house, all that stuff, it sucks. It's not fun for the most part, especially if it's, like, sudden, you know? And sure, like, his actions caused it, but it still sucks. It's a loss regardless. And I think he was just like, no, I want to keep the house. She's taking the house from me. And it became this, like, stubborn thing where when he actually took a moment and he looked at the facts of the situation and he was presented very clearly with, like, Ariana said last week, like, in the last episode, that in her counteroffer, it said that, like, if he didn't agree or something, like, they couldn't, if he didn't have a counter by a certain amount of time, that they would, like, go to court to get the house sold. I feel like he needed that to, like, slap him in the face to actually look at the reality of the situation and realize that logically and logistically, he can't keep the house. It was all based off of an emotion of like, no, I'm not leaving this house. I want this house. Instead of actually looking at the reality of the situation. And I just, Tom Sandoval genuinely needs, like, I wish that he could like take a moment and like not let his emotions dictate everything. That's what it feels like. And I don't say everything because I don't know him. From what I'm seeing, a lot of these like big things, it feels like I'm not making any sense. Then Lala arrives to Tom Tom and she asks Lisa if she can host her sperm donor party at her house. And Lisa is like, you really want to do this about the sperm donation thing? And she says yes. She's like, I'm really excited. Please be excited. And she says, well, you can have the house. So that is happening. Then at Tom and Ariana's house, we see Sheena and Brock arrive. We find out from Ariana, she like tells them that Logan was at Tom Tom, which we had seen Logan at Tom Tom. And he relayed to Ariana that Sandoval is now having second thoughts and might want to sell the house. And she's like, this is exactly what I wanted from the beginning. And every week I become firmly more team Ariana. I didn't understand this whole like, oh, she wanted to stay in the house. She wanted to stay in the house narrative in the first place. But how can you watch this back and see that this entire time Tom Sandoval was basically bluffing about wanting to keep the house in any capacity and not realize that Ariana was being really smart? And I've seen like lawyers and brokers and like realtors. I don't know the difference between realtors and brokers. I've seen people who know shit about this, who are actually smart in this field, say that Ariana is being smart about it financially. And I'm pretty sure her lawyers themselves were like, don't leave the house. Again, why the fuck are you giving your opinion on it then? But anyways, they talk about the podcast briefly. We find out it was three parts. I say we find out. I listened to all three parts. So I don't know why I'm acting like I didn't already know that. And Brock jokes that they have part four coming out, which is Sheena's song Apples, which I hadn't heard the song. I didn't listen to it last summer because I guess at that point I tuned out. I don't really know when the song came out, but I missed that whole thing. I don't think I follow Sheena on anything. I might follow her on Twitter. I don't know if I follow her on Instagram. I don't really know, but I didn't see the song thing, so I missed it. But I think this was like August of 2023, maybe. Like at that point I was busy, you know. I was like heirs to our mindset, you know. Scandal had passed for me. The show had been over. And I wasn't really following. I followed the hippie stuff just because that story really like caught my attention. And like I listened to the podcast interview, but at that point I wasn't listening to like every single podcast about Scandoval or anything like that. So I missed the whole song release, but I did listen to it a couple days ago after I watched this episode, and it's like, okay, I like Good as Gold better. But anyways, Sheena offers to help clean, which is like really nice. She says she's worried that it's too messy because Ariana's hesitant to have people over and she doesn't want Ariana to fall back into a bad place, which is sweet. I think this is nice. I don't think that Ariana's hesitation with hosting Lala's sperm donation party was just about like a level of mess. I'm sure she's probably like, I'm sure that's a big factor, but I think she's also probably just not trying to rock the boat with Sandoval. Like before, if she was having some kind of gathering or if Sandoval was having some kind of gathering, they had a middleman. Now it's probably like she just like, you know, plays it by ear and tries to figure out if he's home or not. And then like if he's in the room, like leaves. Like, I don't know. It's probably a lot more complicated to like organize some kind of gathering where the other person, you know, because she doesn't want to have contact with him. I'm sure it's a lot more complicated than just her apartment's messy because, you know, she could always pay for cleaners. I don't think it's just about that, you know, but I think it's nice. Ariana says in confessionals that now that she knows she's for sure moving, she's not gonna like unbox stuff to then have to pack it again. So she's just stacking things nicely so she can put them like her boxes directly on a moving truck. And you know what? I can't blame her. That's great logic to me. Then at Sandoval's rehearsal, James arrives. They talk about the podcast and the whole interaction between James and Sandoval is so uncomfortable for me to watch personally. Sandoval is just such an asshole. Like, he's such an asshole. He's like, says he cared more about Raquel than she cared about him. He says she used him. And it's just like, Tom Sandoval, I really... Like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I don't think... I mean, actually, no, I'm not even going to comment, because the truth is I don't know, like, genuine definitions of narcissism. I'm not even going to touch that. I don't want to... But it was just, like, what I was going to say is I don't think he has that big of an ego. I think he has a very... low. I think he's very low. But again, the truth is I don't know anything about narcissists. So I don't know if they genuinely have like inflated senses of self or like, I don't know anything about that. So I'm not diagnosing him. I don't know anything. I don't think he has that big of an ego. I think he has a very weak, like, I feel like he has very low self-esteem, because somebody who's like really confident or like secure in themselves, this like wounded him so deeply that Raquel is like, I never actually loved him. Like, I don't think this is a very secure man or person in general. I don't want to make it about gender. Like, I don't know. I feel like this is coming, like, that really hit him deep. Because, like, there are things that, like, I don't know. I guess there are things about that even that I feel confident about myself. But if somebody else said it, depending on who said it, it might hurt. But I'm like, I don't know. It's just the way he... gets so defensive and the way he responds to criticism, like, it really, I don't feel like this is somebody who has a very strong ego. I feel like it's somebody, it feels like it's the opposite. He feels like a very insecure person to me. But maybe I'm reading too much into it. I don't know the man. James says he's done with the shit talking. Sandoval says he didn't get closure. James says fuck closure. Sandoval calls Raquel selfish. They just kind of throw jabs at each other. Sandoval says Raquel only gave James the ultimatum about his drinking because she thought he'd say no. Then James says Raquel said on the podcast that she didn't love Sandoval and she only dated him because she was still upset about James. And they kind of have like a little moment back and forth. And then James says he's not opening for Sandoval and he leaves. Then we're at Villa Rosa for Lala's sperm donor party. Before there's any like real festivities, we see a conversation between Ali and Katie. And Ali says she heard that Katie's been miserable from Lala. Technically, Lala said that she was unhappy, not miserable. Just to be clear about what Lala actually said. Then this is a very brief scene. And then we're at Tom and Ariana's. Both Toms are there. And Sandoval's new assistant, Craig, is there. And Sandoval suggests that Schwartz be his roommate because he cannot afford this house by himself, which, again, not judging him at all, you know, but that's why you have to look at things logically and be like, it sucks that I can't keep this house. I did this to myself. I'm going to let myself feel the feelings about the house, appreciate the time I had, look back at it fondly, all the beautiful things this house gave me, and move on to the next chapter. Because not, like, you can't have everything you want in your life forever. Maybe this was your dream home. As I'm sure Ariana said in the last episode, or two episodes ago at this point, I don't even remember, that this was her dream home and she's sad to lose it too. You know what you do? You find a new dream. Have you never watched Tangled? You find a new dream. Schwartz is not down for the house, for the rent thing, for moving in with Sandoval. Partially, the rent is, like, expensive. He doesn't... He's worried about the optics. He's also just, like, I don't really see the point of putting that much in if I'm not... if it's not, like, an actual investment. Like, it's not, like, a mortgage. Like, it's not going to be in his name. You know, I don't blame him. I also just... I don't think there's anything obviously wrong with having a roommate at any age. Especially Los Angeles is a very expensive city. It's not even about that. It's just about the fact that it's like... they're in a position... like, Sandoval is in a position where he can live alone if he just cuts his losses and moves somewhere that is more sustainable for him individually. Like, he's at an age where he doesn't need a roommate. He's only desperate, or he's only, I don't want to say desperate, he's only pushing for this roommate because he doesn't want to give up the house, which at this point doesn't feel like it's a logic, like, it's purely just an emotional thing that he doesn't want to get let go of the house, and he's decided he wants to keep the house and he's holding on to it, like, till the bitter end. It's like, let go. Let go of the house. It's okay. It's okay, Tom Sandoval. Then back at Lala's party, they play a game. It's like pin the tail on the donkey, but instead it's pin the tail, or pin the sperm on the vagina. They read through the profiles and vote on the donor. I don't know how much is actually in these packets because I'm sure they only read like tiny portions of it for the the donor's privacy or whatever. I don't really know, but honestly, like, the thing is, I've gone on about my feelings towards anonymous donation and the fertility industry. I think there's, like, that level for me, and then there's another level where Lala, this is, like, a partnership with her, and that feels icky to me. On another, that also feels icky to me because, it feels like not only is she promoting this version of an industry that is maybe not accurate, she's, like, possibly making money off of it, or she's, like, getting it, like, I don't know, it's, like, free for her to do something that is typically very expensive for people. There are just, like, a lot of factors to it that I don't like. I also just don't love the idea of, like, profiting off of your unborn children. There are just a lot of factors that it feels icky to me. But alas, all I can do is talk into a microphone. There's nothing I can do except maybe share my thoughts, you know, educate people. Not that I'm not educated, but I know some stuff. And most of the stuff that I like learn, I hear like firsthand from people who are like donor conceived. Stuff I know about adoption, I've heard from adoptees or birth parents. Like the stuff I learn from, like, people who have directly been impacted. And then, obviously, I will, like, read articles and stuff and, like, check that their information's correct. But I think, and, like, not to get on some random tangent, but part of the reason I always really gravitated towards journalism and then English majors and, like, literature is because I really love, or not even love, I don't know if love is the right word. I really appreciate, like, what the humanity of a story can do for, like, a greater cause, if that makes sense. Like, learning about people as human beings can really open your eyes to, like, struggles, to systems, to things you just didn't know about, and it's so accessible when you're learning about it from, like, a real human person. And that's part of the reason I love, like, learning about this stuff from people directly impacted who have, like, lived experience. And obviously, like, anecdotal experience and lived experience is valuable, but it's not, like, scientific fact, which is why it's important to know the actual science and numbers behind everything. But I do really appreciate hearing from people who it's impacted directly because I, you know. But anyways, I don't even remember where I went on that. Anyways, Lala in confessionals says that this process is giving her heart everything, or giving her everything her heart wants. I'm happy for you. I just wish that there was, like, I don't know. Anyways, and she says that her plan is a November or December insemination. So, anyways, then at Ali and James's house after the party, she says she wishes they could have seen the donor's birth charts, and she's so real for that. Another reason it's really important that you know the donor, so you can know the birth charts. I'm kidding. That's, like, the least important reason that a child should be able to know, you know. But anyways, then Ali and James discuss having kids, and Ali says that she's never really seen that for herself. All the people she knows who have kids have always been like, this is something I've always wanted, and that isn't the case for her. And James gets emotional at this. He's always wanted kids. He's always, like, had that vision. This is a really sad conversation. I don't know what's gonna... I really like Ali. I really like her with James. I think she is supportive, but also, like, checks him. And, like, I think she's a good partner to James because I feel like she grounds him. She, like, is real with him, but she doesn't seem, like, very judgmental or impatient or, like, you know. And not that there's anything wrong with, like, but I think to somebody like James, who's a very emotional person, who's had his fair share of struggles, a partner like Ali, who seems like a very kind, compassionate, calm, understanding person, like, I feel like they're a good match, and I really like what I've seen of her and their relationship. But obviously having kids is a very big deal. Who knows what that's going to mean for the future of their relationship one way or the other. I wish them the best. And we'll see how it unfolds. Maybe this is like, who knows? We'll see where it goes. Maybe it's not like this thing where Ali is like, I never want to have kids. Because it didn't seem like that definitive. I feel like people who know for sure they don't want to have kids, most of the time they communicate that to their partner. Like, there's no way that they haven't talked about the fact that James for sure wants kids. And if Ali wasn't like open to that at all, she probably wouldn't. Like, I don't know. I don't know where she stands. I also, again, I don't know her beyond what I've seen on a screen, but I feel like Ali hides the characteristics of to be a good mother. She seems like she's patient. She seems like she's kind. She seems compassionate and like really open to understanding people and their motivations and where they come from. And like, I don't know, I feel like she would be a good parent. And obviously being like having all those traits, when I'm sure there's a different, I don't know, I'm not a parent beyond my cats, and cats are not humans, you know, they're their own fun little creatures with their own minds and, you know, very different than human children, but similar in certain ways, but different in important ways as well. So I'm not saying that, like, I'm sure there's a very different relationship you have, and I'm sure that there are people who are like wonderful friends who maybe have deficiencies or like struggles when it comes to parenting. So I don't want to say that somebody would for sure be a good parent, but she just seems like somebody from everything I've seen who would be really open to just wanting, like, to hearing her kids out, to just, like, I don't know. She seems like she would be really understanding, but who knows? She seems also fairly well-adjusted. Like, I don't know what her childhood was like, but I feel like she seems like she probably has a good relationship with her parents. I don't know. I'm assuming too much about Ali. Anyways, we'll see where it goes. I wish them both the best, whether it's apart or together. Not that I'm wishing their relationship to go downhill. I've just seen a lot of people being like, they're for sure not gonna last if she doesn't want kids. That's really none of my business regardless. I hope that whatever journeys their lives take them, they're both fulfilled and happy. But anyways, at TomTom's first brunch, this is like the last scene of the episode, is the TomTom brunch. James apologizes to Sandoval and they're like cool now. I feel like every other episode it's James. Like, James and Tom Sandoval will have, like, some kind of argument. And then the next day, James is like, I don't care anymore. Like, it really, and I think I said this a couple episodes ago, but I was like, I don't feel like any, like, Tom was saying that he did so much work on his relationships and then Ariana, but any progress he made, like, is going to be disrupted, or is being disrupted by Ariana and the way she talks about him and stuff like that. And I said, I don't think that any genuine, like, relationship fixes that are coming from people in regards to Tom Sandoval, I'm not saying he hasn't done anything, but I feel like it's really been from people who are, like, just open to forgiving and letting go for their own mental health. I feel like Lala is open to that because she doesn't want to hold on resentment because of everything she's been through. James is clearly not trying to hold on to anger and resentment. The people who are like really willing to forgive you and to squash the beef time and time again, even when you're repeatedly disrespectful, are people who are doing it for their own sanity, not because you've been doing a like stand up job in apologizing to people. But that's just my opinion. Then Lala and Katie talk, and Lala asks what Katie, or no, like a bunch of them are in a group together, and Lala asks what Katie and Ali were talking about at the party, and Katie brings up the miserable thing. Lala says she never said that. She says to Katie that she feels like she's in an unhappy place, and Katie says she's wrong. And then Lala brings up the loyalty thing. Katie says that Lala's softness is being directed at the wrong people. I agree. My issue is, and maybe she explained this a couple episodes ago, but I don't feel like, I feel like when Katie was like, this feels inconsistent to me, and I know I said this already, but like Lala was like, it's not my job for it to make sense to you. I am consistent, instead of being like, I understand that you're, like, there was no explanation or trying to be like, I understand that I hurt you and I'm sorry I didn't mean to. I'm just genuinely trying to be open to everybody's sides because I don't want to have preconceived notions or judge people based on their past or whatever this being soft means to her. I wish she had explained it a little bit in this conversation with Katie, in the last conversation with Katie that we saw, without like her being super in a way that isn't offensive and in a way that is validating to Katie's perspective and feelings and why Katie felt a certain type of way about Lala's whole interaction with Joe. Like, that is what is missing for me personally with Lala, is an explanation of her softness. Because when Katie's like, I think your softness is pointed at the wrong people, I think the reason it appears that way to some of us is because I feel like Lala, what she means by this softness is that she's trying to have compassion for people she normally wouldn't. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading into it, but I just feel like that's part of the softness for her. Like, I don't think she's trying to be particularly soft to her friends. I think she's just trying to be more open to people that she would normally, like, be really angry towards. I don't really know. Please come on the pod and explain it, Lala. I'm kidding. She's too big for this podcast. I'm also, like, I don't have guests. Not that I'm opposed to having guests. I've had my sister on this podcast. I only have one microphone and I do all the editing myself. So I feel like it would be kind of a nightmare to figure out how to like connect somebody else's audio from like a Zoom call. I don't even know, because then it's like I have to record the Zoom call and also record my audio. Or I guess if I'm talking on the Zoom call into my microphone, maybe the audio is good enough anyway. I don't really know. But also I record directly onto GarageBand, so then I would have to figure out a way to extract just the audio from the Zoom call, because I don't do video. Like, it would just be too complicated to have guests on this podcast. Unless it's Juan Pablo Galaviz, in that case, please hit me up. You're never gonna listen to this, but we are distantly related. You are a distant cousin of mine. I don't know how exactly. No one's ever explained it to me, but I know that we're related somehow. Please reach out to me. Thank you. I'm kidding. He's never going to listen to this. But wouldn't that be so funny? He doesn't talk about his bachelor experience much. And I just think it would be so fun to interview him. One, because I would just like, you know, it would be really fun. And it would also get me a lot of traction to the podcast. I'm not going to lie. That would be a great, I would say clickbait, but it wouldn't be clickbait. Oh my God, what if I did Juan Pablo Galaviz exclusive interview as a clickbait? That's not really my vibe. But if it was, I would use him as clickbait. Anyways, I lost my train of thought. Katie says that Lala's softness is being directed at the wrong people. Lala says that friends go through changes. Now Katie and Ariana are closer, so she doesn't know where she stands. Katie says that she has all the time in the world. The reason they're not that close is because Lala doesn't have the time. In confessionals, Katie says it's a two-way street. Lala says she wants them to show up for each other. It's an emotional, sweet moment. I have a hard time really digesting this because of the whole Lala and Katie after the stuff that's been happening recently. Like, Lala's been kind of mean, in my opinion, towards Katie lately, and then she unfollowed Katie and Ariana. I don't really like the whole, like, so I don't know. It's hard for me to watch this because I'm like, well, she clearly doesn't care about being there for everybody. I don't really know. I feel like it's interesting that Lala is like brings up the fact that Katie and Ariana are closer. It feels kind of like, oh, I'm not your number one person. Like, that's like a weird thing to say, in my opinion. Because if it was like every time you try to initiate hanging out with Katie or some kind of, like, she was always blowing you off for Ariana, or if she was always busy with Ariana, maybe I would get it. But like, that just doesn't seem like the vibe, because we've seen Katie, she went to like some dinner with you at the beginning of the season. Ariana wasn't there. Katie isn't with Ariana like every second of the day. I don't really understand that mention. It feels kind of like confusing to me. Like, what does Katie being closer to Ariana have to do with your relationship with Katie? I really don't feel like that has been the issue in any of the arguments you've had. I mean, I guess there are moments where maybe there is some kind of tension between Lala and Ariana, but I wouldn't even say that, because it wasn't like they were genuinely fighting. But like at the girls' night with the horoscope reading early in the season, Katie and Lala kind of had a bit of an argument because it was in regards to the Ariana thing, but it wasn't even Ariana necessarily getting mad. It was like Lala being like, nobody's gonna like what I have to say, and Katie being like, you're being a bit much. Like, that wasn't even necessarily just about, that's not about Ariana, that's about the way you're communicating. The last argument you had, Katie was upset about the way, about you interacting with somebody who she doesn't really fuck with, and like the way it felt inconsistent in regards to the way you've viewed loyalty in the past. I don't really understand what Ariana has to do with this. I mean, she did bring up the loyalty thing, but the Ariana comment just felt kind of interesting to me. Then we see James DJing at this brunch, and he's playing Sheena's new song. Then Sandoval is still trying to propose living with Schwartz, and then Sheena walks up to the Toms. They talk about her song, and Sandoval gets upset and, like, storms off, basically, and that's the end of the episode. So, thoughts? I don't have many thoughts right now. I've been going on and on and on. I can't think of a single thing to say. Said all my thoughts. My thoughts are empty. Too much thinking. This is what too much thinking does to a person. I'm not even talking about Vanderpump Rules, okay? I'm talking about the Tortured Poets Department, among other things. I have a lot of thoughts going on in my brain, and, like, only 5% of them are about Vanderpump Rules. Like, not even. But if you like this episode, please like and subscribe. No, I'm kidding. This isn't on YouTube. It will be eventually. Fun little Emmy Awards behind the scenes. It's not even behind the scenes. I started uploading my back catalog to YouTube, and when I was doing that, I started working on a Yellow Jackets video for a visual aspect for my Yellow Jackets deep dives, but that has taken me so long because I keep putting it off that I haven't finished uploading my back catalog because I want to do it in chronological order, and so I would need to finish the Yellow Jackets videos first. So I don't, like, post them out of order, which makes absolutely no sense to anybody. But anyways, I will get it done eventually. It's the off-season of The Bachelor. This is my time to shine. But I'll get it done eventually. I feel like one day I'll have just, like, a really big creative moment and I'll get a lot of it done. That's what I did. Like, I got, like, a ton of it done just in one night because I had, like, a creative moment. So hopefully I can channel one of those soon and get it done. But anyways, not on YouTube, so don't like and subscribe, but follow me wherever you listen to podcasts and share with a friend, rate and review, post it on social media. I don't really know. Anything you want to do means a lot. Even if you just listened and you don't rate and review, you don't follow me, even if you just gave it a listen and you got to this point, thank you so much. It means a lot. And you will hear from me next week. Bye, guys.